You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds. And by God, did we need that cardio today. I am Mags, and with me as always, my son Carlos. How are you?
Oh, I'm not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really happy now. We've got our shelves up with our wrestling and your UFC belt, so yeah, it's looking pretty snazzy in our podcast office.
Yeah, it's looking collectibles going on. Not too bad.
So let's talk about yesterday's event, UFC 248 from Las Vegas, with the double title match of Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Weili Zhang, and also Israel Adesanya defending against Joel Romero. Quickly go through the early prelims and the prelims. We started the card with Dinar Batgarel picking up the first round KO against Guido Canete, and then a decision for Giga Chikadze against Jamal Emmers. Going into the standard prelims, quite a few of them. We started the actual recording with Jared Mershart picking up the third round sub against Darren Wynn. That was a really good fight to watch. Then we had the first round sub of Saparbek Safarov by Rodolfo Vieira. Vieira's after that match, my God, it was swelled up. Then we had the Olympic hero Mark O. Madsen. For some reason, they were making a big statement about calling Mark O. Madsen. He picked up the decision against Austin Hubbard. And then the feature prelim. And wow, what a comeback for someone been out for 2 years. Looks totally different. Sean O'Malley with that 2 minute KO of Jose Alberto Quinones. What a comeback for that kid.
Oh, definitely. Obviously, he had some upsets a couple of years ago. He's worked a lot on his fighting game. It's like what I said to you last night, he looks totally different. He don't even look like the Sean O'Malley he did 2 years ago. But go back to that Mark Madsen fight. Fuck me, his German suplex, that when he pulled off. That was Olympic. That was Olympic level technique. And when you've got Daniel Cormier basically near enough having a fucking orgasm when he was commentating, when Marco Madsen was just pulling off some of the best wrestling techniques out there. I agree with Paul Felder on that one. I've really, even though he might be 35, he hasn't took a lot of punishment in wrestling. He hasn't really been beat or all like that. If they stick him on the keep him on the right path the way he's going, not stick him in the top 15, top 10 straight away, but just let him build up slowly, and I reckon he could out-wrestle Khabib.
Well, it'd be an interesting match to watch, that's for sure.
But his stand-ups are not on the same levels of his, but coming down to the grappling wrestling part, I think that has been the only fight we'd see Khabib choosing not to use his wrestling and just try and stay stood up and use his boxing.
Well, let's not run before we can walk. Let's get on to this main event. And regular listeners will remember last week where we made a point of basically focusing on how quick the show went in terms of fight action, 21 minutes and 18 seconds or whatever it were. Bloody hell, this card made up for that. 4 out of the 5 fights actually went the distance. Only one finish like real in the middle of the card. Let's go to the first one though. Alex Oliveira taking on Max Griffin. Obviously, this went to decision. Oliveira picking up the victory. And I mean, forgive me, Griffin and Oliveira, but you'll understand when we get later into the card. There's two matches that, for totally different reasons, just outclassed the rest of the card, and kind of like, gathering my thoughts, it's hard for me to actually remember this fight because it feels like it was so long ago. For me, I felt that it was a fair result. I felt that Oliveira, it was a close decision, but I think with the big cut that Oliveira got on Griffin, I think that he pretty much deserved it. Griffin did a lot better when he had Oliveira down on the ground. He was able to keep him there for a while. But the only problem was he didn't do a lot in terms of like damage. He was able to control Oliveira a lot, but he just wasn't able to kind of like hurt Oliveira. But once it was on the feet, Oliveira obviously has some vicious power. I mean, the Brazilian Cowboy, he's got knockout power, and his leg kicks were clearly like hurting Griffin. And I remember in the second round, at the start, there was an outside leg kick which near enough knocked Griffin to the floor straight away. Then Oliveira landed an uppercut, and I'm sure he landed another punch, and you could just see Griffin's like head split wide open, and the blood was absolutely coming out of it like a tap. The fight ended up actually being stopped by the ref to get the doctors to come have a look. Obviously, it was fine enough for him to carry on, but I think Griffin also picked up another injury, another cut underneath his opposite eye, so he looked like he was actually in the wars, and I think that kind of might have swayed it in the judge's decision, to be fair. I think the third round was probably Griffin's best round. There was a lot of his corner telling him to basically go out there and just give it all he's got, because they felt that he may be two rounds down. Possibly he was. But yeah, I think fair result. Carlos, what do you make of that first fight?
See, a lot of people probably won't understand you when you say, like, you can't remember what much about happened this fight, but it does make sense. When we get later on into the fight, you'll see about how much the, like you say, the outclassed the fight. Even me, I had to, just as you were talking, just to like, yeah, get like a glimpse of it, just had to like look at some like photos and videos and recap on the fight.
I think the main issue I've got with that particular fight was the fact it was so close. I mean, you look at we'll speak about them when they come on later on, but all the rest of the fights, they either stood out because of how good they were, how bad they were, or that it was a dominant performance by someone, where this one was, because it was so close, it kind of like gets overshadowed by the rest of the card.
That's it. I was just going round for round, and there's parts where you can pick out where they've both landed good shots, but for me it was a fair decision, because Oliveira, the shots that he landed did more facial damage, you could see with the cuts that opened up on Griffin. Obviously, in the first round where Max Griffin did the overhand and hit Cowboy and stunned him and hurt him, I think after that he sort of found a little bit of confidence. But Charles Oliveira
Alex Oliveira.
I don't know why I keep calling him fucking Charles Oliveira. Alex Oliveira. You can just see the next level up. Obviously, he's not that elite level up in front of Max Griffin, but just that next couple of levels up away from him, where he knew what to do in the exchanges, and he knew that if he'd have stayed a bit at distance and get them single shots off, the point fighting will take him to decision, and he'd eventually get the decision, and he did. But the one thing that actually amazed me about this fight and this card in general is no one out the red corner lost.
I know. I think there was something like 13 match fights, and every single red
corner won. Dominated. And like in that fight, Charles Oliveira, Alex Oliveira, fuck off. Alex Oliveira, sorry. He were just able to just get more of them single shots off, and were able to work, especially in that last round where he sort of he bullied Max for that takedown. I think that's what edged him that victory. But this were a very close fight, and it could have been one of them where umming and ahhing into who they were actually giving it to. But for me, Alex did take that fight.
Yeah, I agree. Next, we'll go into Li Jiang Liang against Neil Magny. This was in the welterweight division. Neil Magny, after a long layoff, they didn't quite talk about why he was laid off on the event, but it was because he pissed hot. And this was a very, very dominant performance by Neil Magny. And I don't think Jiang Liang gave a very good account of himself. I've seen this guy absolutely decimate opponents. I honestly thought that he was the favourite. He was gonna lay waste to Neil Magny, but we just never saw anything from him. It was literally just Magny controlling this fight from minute one to minute 15. It was just the quicker with the kicks. He was quicker with the overhand right. He kept playing this lovely leg kick and overhand right combination, which worked really well. And going for the takedowns, Magny was able to take down Jing Lang at will. Now, keeping him there was kind of a different matter, but the fact is he was able to take him down quite a lot, and it was kind of the same theme all the way through all three rounds. It was literally Magny dominating on the feet, Magny going for a takedown, Magny getting the takedown, Magny dominating on the floor, Li Jiang reversing or getting back to the ground, getting back to his feet, and rinse and repeat. And for 15 minutes, it was a very, very dominant performance for Neil Magny. I'm not the biggest fan of him. I'm never going to be the biggest fan of people who feel that they have to like cheat to get one up on the competition. But that was a dominant performance, and he can be very, very proud of the way he kind of stunted Jing Liang.
Well, that's hopefully he'll piss out again. That performance, no one can say that he basically got gifted that win against Lee. He went out there and he took it to him. Even though it went into the hands of the judges, he knew safely going into that third round that he took this fight, and 4 minutes down, that last minute, it basically just cemented it there in concrete that he took that victory. Like I say, Lee, he's been in the UFC since, 2014, 2015 or something?
Yeah, I'm surprised actually, because obviously we've seen him fight a lot, but he's had like 13 fights in UFC.
He's got a lot of experience in the octagon, I know he might not have been fighting elite level opponents, but he's still had the time in there. He knows what the pressure feels like, so it just goes to show how well Neil Magny has took that 2 years off to rethink about the cheating he's done. Rethinking about the mistakes he's made. But in turn, you can tell that he's been in the gym, he's worked on...
He looked good. Yeah, he looked very good.
He looked outstanding. He came into the fight and I didn't mind him after that victory basically saying he wants top 10 straight away, because if you can come in and do that sort of performance on a guy like Lee, who's, like I say, been fighting in the UFC for a fair amount of years, he deserves to jump back into that top 10.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe top 15, top 10 might be a bit of a stretch. We're having 2 years off that welterweight division has moved so far in the time that he's been away from it. But yeah, it definitely deserves someone of a higher calibre than Jing Liang.
Oh, definitely. And going back to Lee at home, I can understand his frustration in the fight, and a lot of people would have looked at it and gone, he put a whooping on him, and he did put a whooping on him. But what a lot of people have got to understand is Neil Magny had like 8.5-inch reach advantage or something like that. So when you're fighting, I've said it a lot of times on the show, when you're fighting someone who's got that much of a reach over you, suck it up. Sometimes you're going to have to get cracked just to try and get shots off. And Neil Magny's boxing were just too good for Lee. Even when he did get on the inside, only thing he could do, because Neil Magny were frustrating him, were just clinching. When he were clinching, Neil Magny was still getting them shots off. But I've got to give it to him how much heart he had in there to still keep up with his head movement, still keep up. We're trying to move around, so not making it an easy opponent, an easy target for Neil to hit. So he did show that he does belong in there with these sort of guys. He's, even though we're getting caught a lot, he were doing the right things. Just unfortunately, we're doing it to Neil Magny, who there's levels to the game, and he's boxing, we're just on a different level.
Yeah.
You do everything right in that position. If someone's got a bigger reach and they're just trying to jab you and jab you and jab you, most majority of the time they are going to hit you, and that's the right thing to do. Is a head movement, duck out the way, try and slip, try and counter, try and get on the inside, and that's what exactly what he were doing. But he was just getting caught a lot and taking that many shots from Neil Magny. And I know it were a 3-round fight, but in that third round, you could just tell that Lee were frustrated. He was getting a bit gassed because of how much he was having to move. That's Neil was just like, it was like a fucking sniper with that jab. He was just popping it off and basically just hitting him whenever he wanted, coming into halfway through second and into third. But yeah, I was surprised that Neil Magny, especially when he hurt him, I think we were in the second when he hurt him and he tried for a takedown. That surprised me about the fight, but all in total, he dominated that from start to finish.
Yeah. So then, let's go to the middle of the card, the only finish of this main card, and wow, what a finish it was. As dominant as we can say that Neil Magny performance was, Bilal Dariush was absolutely levels above him. This was just such a good fight. It only lasted a minute into the second round, but wow, what a great first round we started with. These two have been really, they've had like some really personal issues, and then it gets to the start of the fight and Claus lands a punch straight away. And in the post-fight interview, Dariush said that once he gets hit, he likes to hit back to make people like basically respect him, but he's not just gonna, he's like wants to play that game, I'll crack him back. And he did come back, cracked him, and then he went for this takedown. He kind of got it, but then it was kind of dragging Claus to the floor, and then Claus used the cage. He grabbed onto the cage with both hands, quite clear. It should have really been Dr. Point for that. But obviously he got told by the ref and he let go. But then Dariush, using his amazing grappling, he kind of slipped round the back and got a body triangle whilst Clauser was still standing. So he was literally looking like a backpack of Clauser. And it was just that for 4 minutes. It was amazing wrestling. Props to Clauser for not giving up and for not succumbing to the kind of all these different kinds of attempts at rear naked chokes that Dariush tried. Just amazing. It was just so, so good. Right near the end, Closer finally kind of escaped, and you could see it didn't escape at all. It stopped with the bell, didn't it? It stopped with the bell. Yeah, it was just literally 4 minutes of Dariush trying to get some sort of rear naked choke on Closer, and Closer just trying to defend him off with, I think he tried a few elbows to Dariush's knees. Anyway, we get to the second round, and you could see that Dariush was kind of like limping. You could see that he felt like the pain in those legs, because when you're like got a body triangle and so on, you do expend a lot of energy in your legs, and you could see that lactic acid was building up. So he didn't bother waste any time. He went, he clipped. Oh no, he got clipped first in Dariush, and it looked like Closer was going to go in for the finish, which would have been an amazing like kind of comeback. But Dariush clipped Closer, and he wobbled, and he was almost very punch drunk. But Dariush kind of smelt that blood in the water and just landed a massive left hand, and it just you could see Closer's soul leave his body. His eyes were open, the lights were on, but there was nobody home. He fell to the cage, just absolutely cleaned out cold. The referee had no option but to call that fight off, because he was fast asleep, and Dariush picks up a massive, massive victory against Draco Closer.
That's it. You can't say that this guy's not an absolute animal. He took Closer's best shots on the chin and absolutely ate him. And when he were able to just get that body triangle, now someone who like me, I like the body triangle a lot. But when you're not used to it, or when you're in a fight, you're expanding different amounts of energy and cardio and different amounts of energy to do certain stuff, whether that's break from a clinch or try and fart someone's hand away from your neck or all like that. So when Dariush did have that body triangle, it was just amazing how well he were able to keep it there. But if you've seen when he was squeezing, he was doing it at the right time when Closey was were breathing out. That's when he was squeezing more down, so it were harder for Closey to take another breath in. So every time he were breathing out, Dalhousie's legs were getting tighter and tighter, like an anaconda, where it was just squeezing the air out there. But the one thing that I didn't like what Closey were doing is, fair enough, you pick your poison when you're trying to fight which one of them off. Do you fight the legs or do you fight the hands? And he decided to fight the hands, which was a good move because Dalhousie's arms were around his neck. But the one thing that he was doing is he was fighting the arm that was under the neck. Now, Dalhousie's left arm was already sort of around the neck. He should have been fighting that arm because if you're trying to drag someone's arm down when they're on top of you, when their shoulders are above yours and their hips are above yours and they've already got you in control, they've got the advantages there. They've got the power. They've got the strength in that position because you're not going to be able to, unless you're a heavyweight fighting at lightweight, welterweight, which it's not going to be because these are professional athletes fighting at the same weight. It's near enough physically impossible for someone to win that sort of exchange. So you've always got to fight that hand because that's the hand that's clamping down that pressure. Once you fight that, you've got half the pressure away. Now, when you're fighting a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guy, that can't remember which one of the commentators said it, because I was interested in that, but someone said along the lines of good Jiu-Jitsu guys know how to use their head. Now, what he meant by that is a lot of Jiu-Jitsu guys, when they're wearing gi, when they're doing a rear naked choke, they'll go around and they'll actually grab the back of your gi and they'll use their own head to basically push on the back of yours and on the back of your neck to keep you down.
A third arm.
Yeah, basically almost like a third arm. And that's, I don't know which commentator was saying it, but that's what he meant along them lines. But yeah, Cal should have been fighting that left arm. He should have not been focusing on the right arm that were already around his face. Just get that left arm away so he could eventually fight that right arm and hopefully shake him off. Now, he could have had Dalhousie off a lot quicker now if he did that, but now he's were able to use his experience wisely and stay on his back and up until the third round, and then obviously the fucking knockout came and Jesus Christ, hello.
Yeah, exactly. Then to follow that, you can use a lot of hyperbole when you're talking about fights. You can, people will watch a fight and it'll be the greatest thing that they've ever seen until the next week or until they kind of like they're not wearing those rose-coloured glasses. But this next match, this co-main event between Weili Zhang and Joanna Jędrzejczyk, it quite possibly could be the best match that I've watched.
Over 700 strikes between both of these two people.
It's definitely the best match I've watched between two female fighters. It's quite possibly the best match I've ever watched between any fighters ever. This one went the distance. Wow, it's hard to put into words just what happened in this fight. There's just so much action. I would urge you, if you have not watched this fight, to go and watch it because it's 25 minutes of just bell-to-bell fighting.
This is literally the best women's mixed martial arts fight I've ever experienced. And I've been watching mixed martial arts for, 15 years? This is literally the best women's mixed martial arts bout that I've ever watched in my life.
Definitely. It was almost as well like the perfect kind of like complement of styles. You had Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who's one of the most technically rounded fighters in all of MMA, never mind just the women. And then you've got Weili Zhang, who hasn't got that technique down, but she's got raw power and she's got the confidence and the drive to almost kind of like cover those technical shortfalls. But what a fight. Every single round was just jam-packed with action. Kicks from both. Joanna kind of focused a lot on kicks. That's always been her game plan. She's a kickboxer by trade, and she did go with that for a lot of the fight. Weili obviously not got a kickboxing background, but she threw a lot of her own kicks and she threw a lot of her own punches. I think Joanna, throughout the fight, threw the more punches. She landed the more shots, but the difference maker was the power. the power of Wei Li Zhang. She, for every shot that Joanna landed and hurt, that she needed to land three or four to get the kind of like damage that Wei Li was landing with one. If you've watched this fight, you'll see at the end, just, I'm not a big fan of judging off damage, especially when it's as close as this fight was. I tend to go off striking, I tend to go off like octagon control, takedown, stuff like that. The damage is kind of like secondary, because we know these fighters can have a lot of scar tissue that opens up, so you might not even, it might not even take a hard shot to for it to look like they've been damaged. But there's no way that Wei Li Zhang did not damage Joanna Jędrzejczyk. She looked like the Elephant Man, and that's not even an exaggeration. She opened up a hematoma on her head, and it just spread all over her face, all over her jaw. Joanna's got kind of a little bit of a pronounced nose, and that was flattened by Wei Li's shots. And that's not to say that it was all Wei Li, because Joanna closed both of Wei Li's eyes with shots. These two just beat the living piss out of each other for five rounds. Now, watching the fight, I instantly felt that Joanna probably won four rounds. But then going back over it, I can understand how the judges came to the split decision. This was just an amazing fight. Wei Li picked up that split decision and retained that title. But I said before this fight, Joanna needs to come as the killer that she is, and she fucking brought it for this fight. Wei Li brought it for this fight. This was the best fight I have watched in a long, long time, and both of these girls should be so proud of what they've done.
Definitely. Leading up to the fight, a lot of people were saying Joanna were quite disrespectful to Wei Li Zhang. Now, fuck all that. At the end of the day, Joanna were coming back. This is not a, for me, it's not a last chance at getting her belt back, but I don't think she's going to be fighting for that belt for a bit. So all she was trying to do was just sell the fight and get it arced up, and this is exactly what she did, and Wei Li Zhang were able to play that part in being sort of playing the sweet and innocent one who will fucking bite your face off. So leading up to the fight, both of these women were raring to go. Wei Li Zhang were raring to get that win over Joanna to sort of set a name in stone that she is the best strawweight about, and Joanna were going back in there specifically just to show everyone that, look, I'm still the fucking animal I were 5 years ago. I can still stand up to basically your pro-crown champion, and I'm here to take my belt back. Unfortunately, she wasn't able to do that, but going into the first and second round, Jesus Christ, Joanna was on fire. She were able to get them shots off, them two, three, four, five shots at the time, and were able to get in and out and move. And
Which we both agreed at the time that was her best like way of attacking this fight. We all know that Wei Li has got this fucking crazy knockout power, Joanna has got this amazing technical skill, and she was best using it, and she did try to do that, to be fair to her. She did that for a lot of the fight. It's just that when Wei Li chucks a punch at you and it lands, it fucking hurts.
Yeah, that's it. That's her best way of winning that fight, with her to hit and move, not just hit and hope, because if she was a hit and hope, Wei Li Zhang would have just cleaned her out at any point. So she was clever to get in, get the shots off, and move her head just in time before Wei Li were able to knock her chin clean out. But when in the fight, she were able to put the damage on Wei Li Zhang early. Now, it were only after when Wei Li sort of clipped her on Swede, and were able to get that hematoma swelled up, and Jesus Christ, once you've got a significant damage like that on your opponent, it just makes sense to just keep hitting it, because mm-hmm. you'd be stupid other than that, because that's you've got your weak spot.
Yeah.
Keep exploiting it. And that's exactly what Weili Zhang did. She changed the game up a little bit more, just specifically just to target that area. Hopefully she knocked her out, or it got to basically the stage where the doctor had to come in and stop the fight. And the doctor were all over that, because that hematoma was fucking huge. Jesus Christ, it's like that Mega Man.
It just spread. It started quite high above like the right eye, but it just seemed to spread all the way across her face, and she ended up, it's almost like we're kind of taking piss with how we're describing it, but she ended up like with her face the shape of a Dorito. It was it just ended up being like triangular. She didn't look like the same fighter that started the fight.
Well, that were it, and that like I say, that for us, we on the podcast, we don't look at a fight and go, oh, just because they look like they're more like fucked up, don't mean they specifically lost the fight. Joanna were able to put a beating on Weili and give her what she were able to take. Now, when you are able to damage someone like that and make them look totally different, that for me is just an amount of power that Weili's got in her hands. And it weren't, a lot of people will look at this and go, fuck me, this were a brawl. And if you were to look at it, it wasn't actually a brawl. The technical skill that were from both of these two fighters, even when they were cracking each other, there were still combos, there were still setups, there were still finishes. There was everything you could... these coaches, both of these girls, both of their coaches, from Joanna at American Top Team and Weili Zhang fighting at ATT, CT, whatever, her gym, either way. Well, their coaches can be proud of both of these women, because they went in there and they didn't just go out and slug it out. They went out and shown everyone why these two are true martial artists. They went out there, they went toe to toe and shown proper skill, not just a heavyweight knockout power, it's just standard back. They literally went in there and from setting it up with kicks to finish it off with punches, setting it up from body punches to finish it off with kicks, head movement were on point, footwork were on point, speed, accuracy, everything that you could have asked for in a fight from a coach, from a promoter, from a manager, even just from a fellow teammate, it was in this fight. Both these two women give it their all, and I can understand exactly why they give it to Weili. A lot of people might say Joanna won the fight, like me. She did win the fight for me, Joanna, but I'm going to say, unfortunately, I'm not a judge, and the judge saw it a little bit differently, and I can only understand where they come from, of they're looking at it, Joanna did basically take the most damage. She looked like she took the most damage, but she were fighting back. But we're coming to a day and age where these champions are just something unfucking real, and you've got to kill them now. You've got to knock them out to basically take the belt, because it's either you knock them out or you've got to basically put a whooping on them for 5 rounds straight for you to take their title. Other than that, they sort of
champions advantage.
Yeah, that's it. I don't want to use the word favour, but it's hard to describe it. Other than that, it's like this. They'll always
favour a reason to take the title.
Yeah, that's it. You've got to give them a definite reason where the fans can't question it, because it's a bit different from two fighters who's climbing up the ranks who are coming for it. There's actually a belt on the line. It's usually a main event. That's the talk of the show. Now, when you fuck about with that, you upset a lot of people. Now, you do it on a smaller level, not a lot of people will care, not a lot of people will really even notice. A week down the line, people will forget. But that big event, people will still be talking about that months down the line. So it's, let's say, this fight was just everything you could ask for. And Weili Zhang, she deserved, from going all the way to Las Vegas, putting in all the work with training, and having just the utmost respect of not just looking past Joanna, where a lot of fighters have sort of looked at her and been like, oh, she's not even in it anymore, she's gone and had this breast reduction surgery, she's had this other surgery, she's done this and done that, like she's living like the life of fame. But in my opinion, she can do that. She's made her money, she's made her name, she was a champion for what, best part of 4 or 5 years or something like that. She's able to do all this, and Weili Zhang still had the respect to look at her as a person who hadn't even fought Rose yet, who's still fighting these killers, who's still a killer herself. And she, I guarantee you now, in Wei Li Zhan's head and her coach's head, Betty, they're so glad that they prepared properly for this bout, for the way Joanna turned up. If I were any other woman in that division now, I'd be thinking to myself, like, fuck me, this is, we're hard enough to try and get title off fucking Wei Li Zhang. Now it's going to be near enough, even hard enough, if you got put up against fucking Joanna to get a title shot. It's like, fuck me, what are you going to have to do?
Yeah. So as good as that fight were, like we said, potentially the best fight ever, then we get to potentially the worst title fight ever. Israel Adesanya taking on Yoram Arrow. Now, everybody knows how we feel at this at the Five Rounds podcast, that we didn't think that Yoram Arrow should have got a title shot. We understand why Israel wanted to fight him, because this is the guy that everybody seems to be scared of in this middleweight division, and he wanted to kind of cement his legacy. This fight does not do that at all. Both fighters come out of this looking worse. Yoram Arrow, for someone who this was potentially his last ever title shot, the guy's 42 years old. He threw 40 strikes. That's not 40 significant strikes. That's not 40 punches. That's not 40 leg kicks. 40 total strikes in 25 minutes of fighting. He started the fight standing still for 2 minutes. 2 whole minutes. The first time he moved was when he did a little shuffle. Now, I'm not totally absolving Israel Adesanya of this fight, but it's interesting that Dana White said in his post-fight press conference that Israel kind of matches the level of the fighters that he comes up against.
And he does. He does. He fights to the level of his opponents. He never gets cocky. Now he's got the reason to fight. Like, at the end of the day, now he's the champion. He's the guy that everyone wants to beat and take that off. So he has got to fight smart now. He can't go out and, at the end of the day, he needs to take that belt back to New Zealand with him.
There was no round in this fight where Romero threw more than 10 shots. It was just absolutely pathetic. And Romero has said post-fight that all the blame stands on Adesanya, that Adesanya was running. It was not the case at all. Romero, we all know that he gasses after one, sometimes two rounds. And the only way he didn't gas in this fight was because he didn't do anything. He literally did nothing. He just followed Adesanya around. Now, obviously, Adesanya being this this superstar fighter that he claims to have been, probably could have made more of this. He probably should have finished Romero. But obviously, when you've got someone with that kind of knockout power, and especially after he took that shot in the first that really hurt his eye, you could see that they were
winking for about a fucking minute and a half.
And wiping it. You could see the kind of hesitancy, but he did play a smart game, just attacking that leg all the time. And at the end of the fight, that leg was absolutely, it looked like corned beef. It was just absolutely destroyed. But this was just, to say we got that amazing fight in the co-main event, this was a flop on all counts. Dana White said that maybe he shouldn't have booked this fight. It was a mistake. I totally agree. I think Romero should be embarrassed by that. I think Adesanya kind of should be embarrassed by it as well. This is a main event on a card that people have paid, I mean, in America they pay $100 for this. That it's a rip-off. They threw 8 total between both fighters, threw 88 shots. 88 shots. Now, Adesanya had the better landing percentage. I think he landed something like 58% of his shots, and obviously a lot of those were the leg kicks. But wow, this was a horrible fight. I'm glad it's been done, because then it's out of the way. Paulo Costa obviously is next up for Israel Adesanya.
Quote the fat lesbian.
And I think he'll definitely bring it a lot more than Yoel Romero did. There's just not. It was 25 minutes of boredom, absolute boredom. There's not even a lot you can speak about to say, oh, this happened and this happened, because nothing happened, just leg kicks. And then Romero chucked one shot, and then he rested for about 30, 40 seconds, then he chucked another shot. And it was just, Adesanya wouldn't attack because he was scared of getting hit. he'd just go with the leg kick, and Romero did nothing to change his game plan, did nothing to win this title, but then afterwards kicked off because he felt like he was the one who screwed, trying to suck up to the fans, saying that he came to fight when he didn't. He absolutely did not. It was, I don't even know how to explain it. It was just, it reminded me of, I'll tell you what it actually did remind me of. Do you remember when a fighter called Houston Alexander?
Yeah.
He came into the UFC, knocking people out left, right, and centre. Joe Rogan absolutely hyped him up. And then he had a big name fight, and he just walked around the octagon, and he got cut like the day after that by Dana White. This was worse than that. It was worse.
See, look. That's it. I totally agree with this. I don't think they should have made this fight, but I'm glad they did. It just goes to show that Romero, I don't think he's cut for it anymore. And I don't know if he, because last week he weighed what, like 200 odd pound. He had to cut a lot of weight to get down this. Weight cutting's not easy in the first place, especially when you're 42. You're still built like a brick shit house like he is. Maybe he just went in there feeling just fucking utter drained, like he didn't have no energy, like he just thought, my game plan is just to stand here and counter punch. Now Adesanya, he's had too many kickboxing fights and too many mixed martial art fights to just walk in to someone like Yair Romero, who's playing that game, who wants Adesanya to come in and attack him for him to get that big right hand off. Adesanya's not fucking stupid. Mm-hmm. He's got the belt. He knows that he has to play it safe. So he's not going to walk into basically this fucking meat grinder and potentially get clipped on the chin, because he did it in the first. He walked into him and he did get clipped, and he thought, fuck that.
And he said that in the post-fight press conference. He said he went into attack and he got that shot, and he was like, nah. I'm not getting knocked out to basically bring this fight to Yair Romero. I'm the champion.
He needs to bring the fight to me. And that's exactly what the challenger needs to do. And that's, look at going back to Joanna. Joanna did not stand there and wait for Wei Li Zhang to come and stop her. Wei Li Zhang had to try and stop her because Joanna were putting them that much pressure on. She didn't give her the option. Now, Yair Romero, I agree with totally Dana White. He fucking pissed me off in this fight because he's an animal. A lot of people are going to look at this fight and go, oh, it was shit, he was doing that. But he's not. He's not a shit fighter. And I don't know, if, like I say, I'm going to go back to his weight, because I do personally believe that were a lot to do with it. I just believe he had no energy and he was fucked. He needs to move up, like, everywhere. It's simple as that. But Adesanya, a lot of people can't give him shit for not knocking him out, because he needed to fight like he's done in all of his career. Now, a lot of people will forget about Adesanya's fighting style because of this fight, because it was so boring, so lackluster with what happened in it. But he has always been that sort of counter fighter, and he's always fought to the best of his fighter's abilities. He's mm-hmm. never tried to outdo his opponents when he's not needed to. He's always done that when he's needed to. When his opponents have been bringing it to him, he's been bringing it to them. Look at Gastelum. He didn't just stand there and do nothing to him.
Whittaker.
That's it. Look at Silva. He didn't, even though a lot of people say that he didn't do a lot of stuff in there, that was Adesanya's chess match way of fighting. He's a knockout artist. He's a strike artist. He's not that much of a grappler, but he's got the good takedown defense, and he's shown everyone in this fight who knows what they're looking at that Yair Romero is an Olympic level wrestler, and he's
got dangerous hands.
That's it, he's got dangerous hands. But Adesanya were able to stuff his takedowns. Yair Romero weren't able to get one takedown on him.
I think he got one in the fourth, if I remember right.
No, he didn't put him on his back, it didn't go down, he was basically like straight back up.
Yeah. So the way
they look at it is, it's like they look at the takedowns as they do the takedowns in wrestling. When you take someone down, you can't really class a takedown as like a trip, or you've just basically threw someone up floor, and within about a second and a half they back up to the feet. That's not a takedown. You probably class it as a knockdown at best. But yeah, Adesanya were able to defend the takedowns really well and get off his shots when he needed to. That's what kept him the belt Yoel Romero has no ground to basically say that it was his fault that he came to fight, because if he came to fight, why did he stand there for near enough 2 minutes doing nothing? If he came to fight, why did he not run him down like he did? Look at his last fight against Paulo Costa. That were a fucking war, that.
Mm-hmm.
Where were that sort of Yoel Romero then?
Exactly.
Look, his fights with Robert Whittaker. Tried to finish Whittaker. Where were that Romero then?
Yeah.
It's all on Romero. He's the challenger. He needs to go in there and give the ref a reason to stop that fight and the judge a reason to say that he's the new champion. And for me, he didn't do any of that.
Mm-hmm.
He went in there and basically let Adesanya play his pieces for him. Adesanya knew where he needed to be, and he basically coaxed Romero to doing whatever he wanted to do. He played. That was just basically like a one-person chess match. He could have been doing anything in that fight, and he knew that he was safe, because Romero was doing absolutely nothing to scare him. After that first shot, what he took, Adesanya basically, he had respect for him, then he lost it all, because he got hit, he knew, fuck me, he's powerful, I'm not going to get caught with that. But everything else, he didn't scare him, he didn't do enough for Adesanya to be like, fuck, I need to stop that. It was just that one shot that he's fought, yeah, in his hands, which everyone's knew since day one. You stay away from his hands. But everyone's always thought that he's this strong guy, can basically do what he wants when he wants. And Adesanya, even though he didn't do it that much, he shown that he were able to stop him from doing a lot of stuff that he's been able to do with all of his other opponents. And that, for me, shows why he is the champion.
Yeah. One thing did happen in the fight, which is, it's getting to be a regular thing, and I don't feel very comfortable with it. There was a couple of points in the fight where Dan Mergliotta, the referee, was telling the fighters, "Come on, you've got to show some action. You've got to give the judges something to look at." I'm getting quite pissed off with this referee coaching bullshit. It's happened. We've seen it with Stefan Struve. We saw it with Yaya. The fight with Jeremy Stevens and Yair Rodriguez, where the referees are coming and saying, like, basically advising the fighters what they should be doing. They're not there to do that. They're there to make sure the fighters stay safe and the to stop the fight as and when it's needed. I'm getting sick of them taking like this kind of like approach where they're getting involved in the action. It's just not impartial for me, and I don't like that happening. But yeah, what a terrible fight, what a terrible headline, but it's out of the way now. Israel Adesanya's got that kind of notch on his belt, and he can move on to Paulo Costa. Now, normally we don't kind of touch on what happens outside of the octagon during the shows, but there's a couple of incidents that have happened in these shows that I just want to touch upon. Firstly, obviously, Paulo Costa's had the winner of this title match up next, and he was ringside. But then when it came to the end of the fight, he wasn't ringside, and we found out the reason why was because he actually got kicked out of the stadium. When the fight started, he attempted to storm the cage. He attempted to get into the fight, but I mean, not even after the fight to challenge the winner, but to join in the fight almost, so the security removed him from the ringside and took him backstage. But then there's another incident, and it's even more weirder than that. Brian Ortega doesn't speak a word of Korean. Korean Zombie doesn't speak a word of English. But those two, something happened where they were throwing punches at each other, literally trying to kick them. Apparently, the word was it was backstage, but according to Dana, it was actually in front of the crowd in the fighters' area. Wow, just I don't know what they've got in the water there at Las Vegas, but everyone just seemed to be in a pissed off mood and they just wanted to kick the living shit out of each other. But it sets up a brilliant fight in Ortega versus Korean Zombie, which I'm all for.
Well, that's it. I don't know if it's got anything to do with when their fight got cancelled for when they were supposed to fight before, but like you say, one of them doesn't speak a word of English, one of them doesn't speak a word of fucking Korean, so it's like, how the fuck do you... How do you get into a fucking full-on fist fight with someone who don't even speak your language? Unless you bumped into each other and started just fucking headbutting each other, it should be near enough impossible. But do you not think the UFC security over the last couple of months are doing so much of a shit job where letting fighters near enough jump in cage? Last week's event where they let that fucking Hulk guy, they didn't even start scrapping before Bell ended, and that was it Kevin Anderson just basically went, everyone fuck off out at cage, these are ready to fight anyway. Do you not think the UFC need to be like looking at the security team and going, come on lads, you've had your time pissing about now, fucking get back on top of your shit. Fucking our fighters need to, he's they're still professionals. Now, if you were, I don't want to be the bum of the fucking the party, if you will, but if you were in an amateur event or semi-professional and you were to act like that, the organisers, people who give you licences for these, they won't be particularly happy for you. No. So it's like people who are big names are sort of getting away with this. Now, it's a little bit unfair where if you're a smaller name, you'll be like, what are you doing? You're gonna end up getting fucked for that. But these big names, it's like they can sort of get away with it. Now, I understand the fighters, there's going to be fighting every single day wherever they go, the professional fighters, but for the security, do need to get on top of making sure they're not putting these guys together. Now, it's a hard thing to say that about the Korean Zombie and Brian Ortega, because it's just so out of character for these two to just start fucking scrapping. It's like,
it's weird.
It's like, why the fuck did that happen?
So let's take a quick look at next week's event. To say this is next week's event is only a standard fight now, it's actually not a bad card. It's in Brazil, so it's very Brazil fighter heavy. But even on the prelims, we've got the likes of Veronica Machado taking on B. Maleka. We've got Rani Yaya taking on Enrique Barzola. We've got Elazu Zaleski dos Santos taking on Alexei Kunchenko. Amanda Ribas against Randa Marcos, which could kind of like open up a place for maybe who could be the next kind of challenger for Weili Zhang. The featured main event is could potentially be one of the last flyweight fights to take place with Jussie Formiga taking on Brandon Moreno. But this main card, wow. It's just stacked, properly stacked. Five fights. We'll start with Francisco Trinaldo taking on John McDessie. Johnny Walker, who's in the hunt for a light heavyweight title shot, against Nikita Krylov. Renato Moicano taking on Demir Hadzevich. Damian Maia, co-main event, absolute living legend, taking on Gilbert Burns. And then a battle, an absolute battle in that lightweight division. Kevin Lee taking on, actually, Charles Oliveira, not Alex, properly Charles Oliveira. So that's an amazing card for a standard fight. That's our card. I'm really, really excited for that one.
That's exactly why we're fucking up Alex's name. These two have fucked a fight in like near the week after each other. Well, Kevin Lee, respect to him for staying busy. He's showing why he wants to be in talks for that title contention. But Charles Oliveira is a tough opponent to get past. But like I said, this card stacked from top to bottom. Like I said, with Damian Maia, who's literally a living legend, fighting Gilbert Burns, who's been in the UFC for quite a long time now. And then Johnny Walker, respect to him for taking the loss on the chin. And
hopefully he's learned from it, because it was a silly loss. He shouldn't have lost like that.
No, he shouldn't have lost like that. I think if he's got any sense about him, and his coach have got any sense about him, they would have told him, look, you're here now. You've made it to the UFC. You're in the big times now. Stop fucking about. Mm-hmm. Stop dancing to the octagon. We know you're a good fighter, so just be a good fighter. Stop doing all this fucking about bollocks when you've got no reason to, doing all this dancing, using up all your cardio. Stop acting like a prick.
The rest of the division is leaving him standing.
Well, that's it. When you start acting like that, and like he put himself out one at first time because he fucking celebrated and dislocated his shoulder.
He did that flop, didn't he?
Yeah, and he got knocked out in a way that he shouldn't have got knocked out. For doing silly mistakes, fucking about before getting to the octagon.
But then you see the likes of Dominic Reyes getting a title shot. You've seen like Cannonier like hovering above. You've seen
Blachowicz
just being absolutely outstanding. it can get it's a stacked division, yeah. And he could quickly drop from third or fourth rank to 10th.
Well, that's it. He can easily fade in the shadows for the UFC to look at these other guys and even the fans, because a lot of the fans take a big part, and a lot of people say today, the fans take a big part of who gets title shots these days, because if these guys are knocking people out, like Blachowicz, he's been knocking people out in his last three fights now, so he's got a lot of people behind him saying that he's a true contender and he's got his knockout power for Bones. You don't hear that now from fans of Johnny Walker. You heard that when he were up and rising, but when he was acting like a knob coming to the octagon. Well, like I say, hopefully he's learnt from that, and hopefully just calms down a little bit. He's made it to the big leagues now. He needs to get his fucking big boy head on. He needs to screw his head back on and realise when the time is to fuck about and when the time's not. Fuck about when you've won your farts. Do that in your after party and shit like that. Do whatever you want. Fucking smash a balloon or something. But don't do all that before you come into the octagon.
Well, we've said that it needs to be more professional. So hopefully it will be. But either way, it's going to be an amazing card next week. So yeah, join us for that. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. Follow this guy here at Kirby_Carlos. Follow the show at Five Rounds Pod. Thank you guys for listening, and that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.